Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you the third aliyah of the Sidra, or Parsha of Miketz, in the book of Genesis, Bereishit. Vayomer paro el Yosef, achare hodia Elohim otecha et kol zot, ein navon v'chacham chamocha. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, after, meaning since we see that God has informed you of all of this, there is no one as insightful and informed as you. This refers back to Joseph's advice that Pharaoh appoint a Navon v'chacham to be in charge of preparing for the seven lean years in the time of the seven plenty years by taxing the people's produce and establishing guarded storehouses in every city. So Pharaoh says, essentially, no one fits that bill better than you. Most commentators agree that chacham means the ability to gather and remember facts, and navon is the ability to make deductions from those facts. In this case, the deductions are really a prediction of the future, as Yosef is doing, and the ability to plan based on those theoretical models. So I translated the words as insightful and informed, but there's certainly their flexibility as far as how those can be translated. Continues Pharaoh, Atati ye al beiti, v'al picha yishak kol ami, rak hakisei egdal mimecha. You will be in charge of my house, and on your word, all of my nation will be supplied. Only my throne will be greater than you. So, essentially he's saying, you, Joseph, are second in command, I'm number one. The word house, when he says al beiti, probably means not just literally a physical house, but control of all the finances and the comings and goings of the palace and the people in the palace. So it's sort of a combination of chief of staff and chairman of the Federal Reserve, perhaps. Like Rahm Emanuel and Bernanke put together. I realize that if you're listening to this year, 10 years from when I'm making it, nobody may remember those names, but in 2009, they kind of make sense. And if you're wondering how an Israelite could ever become chief of staff, well, not only happened in Joseph's time, but it more or less happened in the year 2009 as well. Vayomer paro el Yosef, re'ei natati otcha al kol eretz Mitzrayim. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, I have set you over all of the land of Egypt. Well, actually, I should go back to the previous verse. There was a difficult word there, yishak. That doesn't mean to kiss. That means it comes from the word meshek or something like shuk, which means to supply goods for. Anyway, getting back to this pasuk, and Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. That phrase, all the land of Egypt, comes up quite a lot here. Since Pharaoh was already talking to Joseph, the question is, why does it have to say Vayomer Paro Yosef again? He's already speaking to him. Why does it have to say that Pharaoh is talking to him again? Usually when this happens at Tanakh, it means that in between the previous Vayomer XLY and the current Vayomer XLY, there was an interruption, perhaps an interjection or objection from the listener, in this case Joseph, which must be countered by restarting the speech. Usually there's a deviation or things go in a different direction. Here, I think based on what we'll see in the upcoming verses, it seems that Paro essentially up to this point was speaking directly to Joseph, just sort of offering the job. But there's been no official announcement. It hasn't been done in front of witnesses. It hasn't been done with the full pomp and circumstance that it deserves. So essentially this verse starts the official declaration. And now, Vayasar Paro et Tabato me'al yado vayitenota al yad Yosef vayal beishoto b'gdeshesh vayasem revid azahav al tzavaro. Then Pharaoh removed his ring, meaning his signet ring, by which laws were confirmed, and he set it on the hand of Joseph. So Joseph essentially was given something of a blank check. And he dressed him in clothes of fine linen and placed a golden chain around his neck. That chain, no doubt, is a sign of Egyptian authority. And if you're thinking, wow, this reminds me of what happened to Mordechai in the Esther story, that's very true. But since the Esther story is based on this story, that's really something to be kind of explored there. Vayarkev oto b'mirkevet ha-mishneh asher lo, vayikra'u lefanav avrech, v'naton oto al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Again, we have that kol eretz Mitzrayim, all the land of Egypt. And he had him paraded on the secondary steed that was his, and they, no doubt referring to the masses who saw this procession, called before him Avrech, or had called them before them Avrech, a difficult word. It seems to mean father, Av, of the king, Rech, and he set him up over the land of Egypt. The expression father of the king, fits here. It doesn't seem to mean higher than the king. It seems to mean an advisor to the king. And in fact, in chapter 45, verse 8, where Joseph is talking to his brothers, he refers to his position as, that God has set me as an av le pharaoh, as a father to the king. According to other opinions, avrech is like the command havrech, the hifiel command form of havrech, which means to bow down. So other people were saying, as he passed by, everybody bowed down. Unkelus and Rashi prefer the first version, father of the king. Once again, in the next verse, Paro begins a conversation. We have Vayomer Paro Yosef. So there seems to be an interruption. What has happened? I would say it appears that the public ceremony is over. Everybody has either bowed down to or accepted Yosef as the number two in command. And now Pharaoh speaks directly to his second in command. Vayomer Paro el Yosef, ani Faro, uvil adecha lo yarim ish et yado ve'et raglo b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, which is redundant. Well, of course, who else would he be except for Pharaoh? So we'll get back to what that means, what that assertion means in a second. And without you, or without your say, really, none will raise neither their hand nor their leg in all the land of Egypt. In the previous Aliyah, when Joseph used the same term, bil adai, it seemed to mean I have no inherent capabilities for solving dreams had God not wanted me to tell you what the dream was. Here the sense seems to be the opposite. So Pharaoh's kind of playing on that expression of humbleness by saying, yeah, that's fine, you're very humble, but no one is going to make a move without your say-so. According to Unkelus, the sense of the very obscure phrase, not raising a hand or a leg, is a military sense. No one will raise their arm to lift a sword or their leg to mount a horse. If this is right, that would mean that Yosef is now, besides also being the chief of staff and the head of the banks, he is also the secretary of state and is in charge of Egypt's military. Again, according to this interpretation, we can then go back to the word ani faro, which means Pharaoh is saying, I am Pharaoh, so nobody can second guess my command. And my command is that you, Joseph, are going to be in charge of essentially everything in the country. Vayikra Pharaoh shem Yosef tzofnat pa'neach, vayitein lo et osnat bat poti fera kohen on leisha, vayite Yosef al eretz Mitzrayim. And Pharaoh named Joseph tzofnat paneach, which means, assuming that it's an Aramaic expression, which I think it is, revealer of that which is hidden, as in the dreams. And he gave him Osnat, the daughter of Potiphera, the priest of On, as a wife, and Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Now, the question is this Potiphera, who is his father-in-law, the same Potiphar who he worked for, meaning that he married the daughter of the woman that tried to seduce him and got him thrown into jail? So many commentators say yes and tie the whole kind of the two stories together. Some commentators say no way. And to be sure, the letter ayin at the end of the name here, Potiphera, cannot be ignored. The fact that it does not appear in Potiphar is significant. Also, the job descriptions don't really match. Potiphar, the original employer, was a chief executioner or the head of police. Here, there is a sense he's called the priest of On. Now, Kohen doesn't have to mean priest. It can mean the head of or even a friend or advisor. But still, the jobs don't really match. And the simple translation is that this was a major priest. The priests were, without question, a major power in Egypt. Very often, kings that didn't get along with their priests tend to, you know, not do so well. And therefore, while On could be the name of a city or precinct, I would think that On is a god's name here, and that this is a priest of On, and that gave Jacob the status to which he can then go at, no, sorry, Yosef, the status of which he could then go out and rule the land with authority, because he now has acceptance of the king and married into apparently a major priest, who is also a major politician in the land of Egypt. Yosef's name is interesting. That is the Tzofnat Paneach, because it seems to be Aramaic. So the question is, why would an Egyptian be giving him a Semitic name? Aramaic, of course, being close to Hebrew, a Semitic language, and very different from the Egyptian language. Of course, some scholarship points out that there is an Egyptian origin. However, this may be time to talk about the Hyksos. And in fact, this may be the time of the Hyksos, which is an intermediary period when Egypt were ruled by the Hyksos, which essentially were non-locals, non-Egyptians. In fact, the Hyksos were a Semitic tribe that had come from the Aramite area, which is in Syria, southern Turkey, and actually come to Egypt and conquered the land during this approximately 100-year period, really throwing the locals out of control of Egypt and controlling Egypt from the middle of the 17th century, say about 1650 BCE, until they were ousted by the native Egyptians of the 18th dynasty and the 16th century, about 1500 BCE. The king who fought against the Hyksos successfully was named Amhos the first, and the 18th dynasty actually became a masterful dynasty under the first, I guess, the first king who didn't have to spend all of his time fighting, named Amenhotep the first. Yesterday, if you remember, I suggested that it was Amenhotep the fourth, who is not his great grandson, but because the names switched between Amenhotep the first and then Tutankhamun the first and Amenhotep the second and then Tutankhamun the second. But Amenhotep the fourth was famous for his worship of the sun disk called the Aten, who I argued yesterday was influenced by Joseph's public loyalty to the Abrahamic conception of God, to the idea of a just and all-powerful Elohim. So, if Egypt was ruled by these Hyksos, by these Semites, at this time of the, and this story is taking place during that intermediary period when Semites were in control of the land of Egypt, and I believe that the timing is correct, then it's not at all surprising that, first of all, Jacob, when he came down with his whole family, would be more welcome during this period because, essentially, they were Semites ruling, and they would be more acceptable to Semites coming and having some control and power in the land. And it would also make sense that he gave him a Semitic name, a nearly Aramaic name of Tzophnath Paneach. It would ultimately, the third thing would really explain if this is the time of the Hyksos rule, and that does explain why Joseph is being accepted along with Jacob eventually when his family comes down. It would explain why the Israelites were so hated when the new Pharaoh, that is the 18th dynasty, rose to power. If you remember, there's a, in Shemot it says a new king arose who did not remember, Joseph, and there's a question of whether it was the same king who didn't want to remember Joseph, whether it was a really new king, a new pharaoh, but I think it goes farther than that. It's not only a new pharaoh, it's a new dynasty, and it's not only a new dynasty, it's a local dynasty who hated the dynasty that had accepted Joseph into a position of power, i.e. the Semitic Hyksos invaders. Anyway, getting back to the chapter, V'yosef ben shloshim shana be'omdo lefnei paro melech Mitzrayim, v'yetzei Yosef lefnei paro v'yavor b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Again, we have that phrase, you know, going throughout the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he rose to power before Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from before the king and traveled through the whole land of Egypt. And I think what's being described here is that Joseph is really going out, and really he's the point person. Like Pharaoh is like a symbol that nobody has ever heard of or met. But Joseph, everybody's met because he goes from city to city organizing. He's like a school principal that doesn't just sit in the office, but is always in the hallways and looking into a classroom and talking with the students and really involved in the whole process. Essentially, Joseph is a dynamic ruler who really went to the people, and as a result of which the people no doubt respected and were loyal to him. Vatasa Aretz, and probably were a little bit afraid of him considering he was setting up a military structure to guard the wheat throughout the land. Vatasa Aretz b'sheva shnei sava likmatzim, and during the 7 years of plenty, the land, which I think means the people of the land, created store places. Kmatzim seems to be store places, which means they gathered them into great storage pits or to granaries or wherever they stored this type of produce. Vayikbos kol ochel sheva shanim asher hayu be'eretz Mitzrayim vayitein ochel be'arim ochel shtei ha'ir asher svivotaha natan betocha. And for 7 years they gathered all the food that was in the land of Egypt, and they placed the food in the cities. Each city's fields that surrounded its city were placed in it, that is, inside that city storage. So everything stayed very local and very organized, and the logistics were very organized. Things were being done very well by Joseph. Now, how could the pasuk says they gathered all the food up? And the question is, vayikbotze kol ochel shovashani. The question is, how could they, that Eben Ezra asks, how could they gather all the food. If they had gathered all the food, there'd be none left to eat, and they would have starved during the years of plenty. So Ibn Ezra says very famously that the word kol, or all, does not necessarily mean kol, every last bit, but all that they intended, all practical. And therefore, whatever they intended to take, that's what they took. Rabban says actually that all means all. He doesn't like playing games with the word all. And what he says is that all the food came under the jurisdiction of the king, even though not all of it, only 20% of it probably was stored away, or a portion of it was stored away. Vayitzbor Yosef bar kechol hayam arbe ma'od ad ki chadal lispor came aspar. And Joseph heaped up the produce like sands of the oceans, a very great amount, until it could no longer be counted, since there was no equivalent counting. There was no number that went up that high, so to speak. Back then, you couldn't simply add on zeros to any number to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. The exact meaning of the word bar, Vayitzbor Yosef bar, is unclear, although Unkel translates it as avura, which means generically the harvest. So I went with produce, harvest is good. Some people translate corn, which is fine, but if I'm not mistaken, and here I would ask if there are any agriculturists out there, feel free to tell me, but I don't think there was corn in the sense that we Americans, or at least English speakers, know of corn, that yellow substance, which I think is native to America. I think it just means grain produce. And now we move away from Joseph's job to Joseph's home life. Well, the Yosef Yulad Shnei Vanim, Beterem Tavo Shnat Arav, Asher Yaldalo Asnat, Batpoti, Fera Kohen Own. And to Joseph was born two children before the year of famine, meaning the first year of the 7 years of famine, which Osnat, the daughter of Potiphera, the priest or ruler of On, had birth to him. There are redundancies here. The name is repeated again, the name of the wife's family. It almost says twice that they were born, kind of repeating this idea. And the question is, and then there's the kind of the strange expression of, what do we need to know? Two children were born before the famine. I mean, where is that important? Does it mean other children were born afterwards? So I think the sense here is that he did have other children, and commentators say that. There were children that were born after the famine started, and after he was joined by his father and family in Egypt. And that's significant, and I think it may be not exactly a criticism, but pointing out where Joseph is going. Joseph is the prince of Egypt, essentially. He is fully Egyptian. His brothers don't recognize him as anything but an Egyptian when they come down to visit him. And I think essentially there may be a bit of criticism here, which is that the two sons which we're about to see that are born, which are Menashe and Ephraim, were born before the famine set in, which is when really Joseph rises to power, because we'll see that's when all the people turn to Joseph and essentially enslaves the entire country and becomes really the master. At this point, he set everything up, but maybe some people said, well, maybe there will be a famine, maybe they won't, you know, we'll listen to you, Joseph, but who says you're so smart? But once the famine kicks in and Joseph is proven to be correct and nobody can get any food unless they go to his military storehouses, there's no question that he's really immersed into Egyptian society. There are mepharshim that point out what seems to be obvious, that is Menashe and Ephraim, who are about to meet, are the only ones who really remain part of the tribe. And they only remain part of the tribe, part of the Hebrew tribe, part of the Israelite tribe, because Jacob took the care to say to Joseph, listen, these two kids, they're mine. I'm taking them for me. Any other kids that he may have had, either with Osnat or with any other wives, they're simply lost to Jewish history. Now you could say that there were no kids, and that's possible. The verse seems to indicate that there were kids, and just these two were born before the famine kicked in. Vayikra Yosef et shema b'chor ben asher ki nashani Elohim kol amali ve'kol beit avi. And Joseph named the firstborn Menashe because God has made me forget. It's a play on the word nashani, all of my toil. He has made me forget all of my toil and all of my father's house, which means not only the brothers, but so much all of the trouble he had in his brothers, in his father's house. And he named the second one Ephraim because God has made me fruitful, Ephrani, kind of a play on the word pre, in the land of my affliction. And there's no question, here is no criticism of Joseph at all, that he remembers exactly who it is who has helped him out. He never forgets that. There's a famous medrash that the reason why he sat in jail after saving the steward, the wine steward, was that he begged the wine steward for help instead of asking God to take him out of the pit. Of course, that's a midrash. It's not in the text itself. But I think there may be an evolution here. Maybe the Medrash is saying at this point, this is where Yosef is really getting it right. This is where Yosef realizes that he's gone from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high, and all of it only because God has decided to help him, and otherwise he would still be sitting in jail.